asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances.
So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.
In recent weeks, we've really focused on some ways that listeners can boost their income. So whether that's through starting your own side business and growing your network like Hala talked about, or when we talked with local realtor Alan about diving into investing in real estate, well, what better way to test the waters? While you are away, your home could also earn extra income.
That's right. Your empty space could be an Airbnb while you're traveling, because that's all you need to become an Airbnb host. It's a lot easier than you think, and you don't need to Airbnb your entire house. You could just host your extra spare room. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Supercharge your work decks with AI-powered Canva presentations. All you do is start with a prompt. You describe your presentation in a few words, and Canva presentations will generate captivating slides that you can then customize in seconds.
Canva presentations are designed for every workplace and every department. Whether you work in sales, marketing, HR, ops, and more, Canva presentations can generate any deck you want for work. Sales decks, marketing presentations, onboarding plans, you name it. Any department can save time on any presentation with AI.
Generate slides in seconds with Canva presentations at canva.com. Designed for work.
Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
And I am Matt.
Today we're talking blue collar cash, restless realtors, and social media for savings.
Social media is for savers. It's like Virginia is for lovers. Which is, by the way, I think that's the most popular state motto is Virginia is for lovers.
It's the best of the bunch.
It's pretty good. But yeah, we've got a lot of good stories, personal finance stories to get to this week. And yeah, those realtors are restless. There are a lot of changes coming to the housing
market. A lot of freaking out. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think for good reason. We'll get to that later on in the episode. But first, a quick shout out to a couple folks who referred the newsletter to multiple friends. So a big thank you to Lan M, as well as Diraj, or maybe, is it Diraj? Maybe that's how you say it.
Maybe.
If you're trying to be accurate. I'm going to say Diraj P, but we appreciate you both.
For
spreading
sure.
The good word of How to Money.
The How to Money newsletter. You can always subscribe at howtomoney.com/newsletter. Matt, let's just a quick follow-up to something we mentioned last week before we kind of get into the nitty-gritty of the Friday flight. There was an article I read about airlines, like why they're increasing baggage fees. We talked about that. It's just kind of frustrating, right, to see the baggage fees climb and climb. And we said basically the way around that is to either get the credit card of the airline you like to fly or to just pack lighter, right? Use a bag instead,
a backpack.
Yeah.
The Cotopaxi 28L.
It's pretty fantastic, yeah.
Fits within the confines of what it is that Frontier and other discount airliners require.
That's right.
From a dimensions.
There's a lot of chatter
standpoint.
in the How to Money Facebook group about that after the fact.
Oh, yeah?
Because they're like...
A lot of other folks that are big fans of the Alpa.
Yeah, they're like, what size do I get? Like,
Alpa's perfect for multiple days.
Yeah, I mean, think about the price the backpack pays for itself at some point, depending on how many trips you go on.
This is cool. It's a fun... I love it.
But if you're wondering why the airlines charge and continue to increase baggage fees,
because they're greedy.
Well, I don't know. I don't like the term greedy. But I think
they're a publicly traded company, so it's not greed, but they do have a duty to their shareholders to increase revenues and to grow.
Well, they have a lot of employees and they're trying to run a profitable business. So one of the reasons, though, that they, instead of hiking fares, hike baggage fees is taxes. There is an incentive for the airlines. They don't pay the same amount of tax to the government on baggage fees that they do on airfare.
On checked bags, it's like straight in their pockets.
That's right.
Oh.
So I think they pay something like 7.5%.
That's very nice.
Of the airfare price.
If you're the airline.
Right.
Trying to maximize profits.
That's right. So in some way, it's kind of like on eBay. I think when you sell something on eBay, you don't pay a cut to eBay of the shipping price. So why not sell the thing for a whole lot less and just jack up the
$21
shipping
fee? Or,
I think that's exactly what the airlines are doing.
It's
this incentive. Yeah. To get them to lower airfares and raise Baggage fees instead.
Yeah, all things held the same, you're going to make more money, or the airlines are going to make more money collecting that additional income revenue via baggage fees.
It's just one of those things where like incentives run the world, man. And this is one of those incentives that just pushes them in this direction.
It's a creative way for them to find a workaround. Like, honestly, it kind of makes me think of if you contribute to a 401k or to a traditional IRA, well, that's money that you don't have to pay taxes on. It's just a, let's just divert those funds to, you know, over here. Obviously, in this case, that's money that you can then invest. But yeah, the ability to find different workarounds, different deductions, I'm all for it.
Yeah.
I think it's smart.
It's just, it just explains, I think, kind of this natural phenomenon that's been occurring over the years. And you keep seeing the baggage fees rack up and the price go up out the wazoo. And it's like, why? Because airfares have been pretty competitive. This is the one space, just those ancillaries, right, that the airlines charge that have been going up significantly, way more than airfare. And now we know why.
It's much more believable than them saying, oh, we've got to recoup some costs because fuel costs because your bags weigh so much.
Right.
It's like, no, you're just trying to, we know that you're trying to maximize profits. Just, I don't know. I honestly wish they would be a little more transparent and forthright with that information because to me, that's a little more understandable.
Makes you hate them less.
Yeah, it kind of does. Like, it makes me appreciate their creativity, I guess. I don't know.
I agree.
As an industry. But yeah, let's get to some additional stories. There is a new proposal to dial back work weeks to 4 days rather than five, the traditional 5-day work week. And depending on where you stand politically, perhaps you might think this is the greatest thing since sliced bread.
Or on how much you hate your job, I guess.
True. Or you might think this is a pretty dumb idea. Shorter work weeks, they are more in vogue right now. And there have been different trial runs happening in different places across the globe in recent years with mostly positive results. Although I'm curious to see long term what that means for that country. Because in the short term, it's like, oh yeah, productivity is just as high. But what does that do to other things, innovation, things like that? That being said, we've got a different take as usual. we land somewhere in the middle. But first, let's kind of explain some of the nuts and bolts here. The bill would require employers to limit your hours to 32 hours a week, and that's without reducing pay. But if you work more than eight hours in a single day, well, time and a half kicks in. Sounds pretty nice, right? If you work more than 12 hours in one day, double pay, baby. And
yeah,
so
you'd
again,
be happy to pull those 18-hour shifts then,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, folks are like, yes. Will this actually pass? It certainly seems unlikely. And should it pass? Well, we don't think so. I think part of the reason our economy is doing better than every other economy in every other country in the modern world is because our creativity and the productivity, going back to, like, whilst touching on, for the short term, there might be positive results, but what happens to different industries within countries over the long haul as folks are basically de-incentivized to work? Like, the fact that we've got Starship Heavy blasting off into space, well, that's likely because there's an insane person at the head of that company encouraging folks to work crazy hard and leading by example in most cases.
Did you see the video of the first Neuralink? I mean, that stuff only happens.
I did.
Because some crazy people out there decide to work 80-plus hour weeks. Like, you want rockets in space? Do you want satellite internet for the world at a reasonable price? I mean, this is the way it happens. And
what did you think about the Neuralink thing?
I'm fascinating.
Mind-blowing. Yeah. I could not, but like, literally moving the curtain. Like, you're talking about the guy with the chest?
Yep.
Oh my gosh. He's like, okay, let me go ahead and turn off the music because they're shooting a video. Yeah, it was mind-blowing.
There's a reason our economy is more dynamic than the economy of France. And there are trade-offs, right? There's always trade-offs involved. Mm-hmm. And the thing is, though, Matt, you and I also take another side of this, which is you should proactively consider reducing your work hours. And largely, oftentimes, that means more frugal habits. And so when you've been saving and investing thoughtfully for a while, you gain more margin and you should use and exploit that margin, which we think means, maybe considering a 32-hour work week yourself, even if there's no government mandate that you engage in it, right?
Yeah, the end goal is the same, what it is we're trying to achieve, but how you achieve that makes all the difference in the world, whether
though,
it's a personal decision or whether it's, like you said, government mandated.
Yeah, and even though Elon Musk is working 80-plus hour weeks, guess what? I don't have to and I don't want to. So more power to you. I'm glad that people have the choice, though. They can if they want. And
exactly.
CNBC actually highlighted somebody who did that this week. This highlighted someone who went from a director-level job to working part-time at Target. And she wrote about how good it was for her life.
Not in Target management, but
like
an hourly employee there working in the store.
Yeah, and those are the kinds of decisions you can make when you've been thoughtful about your incoming and outgoing, right? And you can choose to take a less lucrative job and not be worried about derailing your career because you care less about it. There was another article in the Wall Street Journal about post-achievement life, right? Where basically people collect big paychecks for a number of years, and then late 30s, early 40s, they start prioritizing other things. And it doesn't mean that they're not working at all, but it's that kind of better approach to FIRE. Instead of all to nothing, it's all to less, right? Or whatever. And so I love that approach. I like the kind of kick butt, then kick back sort of approach. More money can be a great thing, but it's important to realize that it can derail us from what really matters. And so even if you and I don't think that a bill that precludes folks from working more, or then, you know, forces employers at least to pay you more if you do work more than 32 hours a week, we think there's a lot of wiggle room for businesses to kind of implement four-day work weeks of their own accord, because they realize it's going to make their employees happier and potentially more productive. And at the same time, you have that ability to make some of those choices in your own life too.
That's right. By the way, we link to all the articles that we mentioned during the Friday flights up on the website at howtomoney.com. But what was fascinating about that article is they're highlighting like big time earners who then step back from earning millions, essentially.
Which, and people thought they were crazy.
Exactly. Which is, it's certainly admirable, because I do think it would be harder to be making bank like that and then to say, okay, instead, I want to go rock climbing, or I want to be a surfer. I certainly get that. But even just this mentality of the, again, the post-achievement life, it's still too akin to like traditional retirement for my liking. Because what they're saying is, instead of like working your butt off until you're 60 and then kicking back, why not do it when you're 40? Well, how about you start doing that when you take your first job, or like when you're 20 years old even, or if you're older than 20, but even now, trying to find that balance to where you can prioritize some of the different things in life, like engaging in your community, taking care of family members, taking care of your health, or even hobbies, like if you do want to go rock climbing, like that kind of thing.
So basically what you're advocating for is more balance throughout your entire life.
Yes, like why work hard, play hard? It just seems like this, just a more traditional view of work-life balance, where it feels more partitioned as opposed to it being more integrated.
Yeah.
And something that you continue to do because, hey, work, it's life-giving. It's you're able to do meaningful work. You're able to contribute positively to society.
Sure. Yeah, I'm not all about like quitting work altogether. Yeah, I think both talked about how I think I'm going to work at least in some way, form, or fashion for a long, long time. But I do think it is akin to front-loading the sacrifice, which is what we talk about. There is some element to which, at least in those early years, hustling and making outsized contributions to your retirement accounts, especially, let's say, if you plan on having kids and you're pre-kids, you just have more wiggle room. You have more ability to throw more into those endeavors. And I think there can be a lot of wisdom in that. So you can set yourself up for a more leisurely lifestyle later on.
Yep. That's true. You never know what your health is going to look like, your mobility, the ability for you to do hard labor later in life.
I think so. There's another, by the way, like laws that are happening in other countries around the world, including in France and Spain, and it looks like Australia maybe soon, called the Right to Disconnect Law. And I think I like this law a whole lot more than the mandated 32-hour work week. Basically, this prevents employers from being able to contact you after work hours. So if you have a pesky manager who's like texting and emailing you all hours of the night, expects replies at 4 a.m. or something like that, which feels just unruly, then a law like this would actually prevent that from happening. So I think that's maybe some of the drain too, Matt, that people feel is thinking they always have to be connected. They always have to be responding,
constantly
even post-dinner and stuff like that. Yeah. And so if there is a law that we're going to do that prevents people from overwork, I think this is like a better approach than the mandated work week.
Yeah. From a principal standpoint, I hate it just as much. But in practice, it does seem like it's less egregious. But even still, I wish that this could be something that individuals could work out with their employers. Like, this is an employer-employee conversation, as opposed to government saying, hey, just by the way, you can't text your folks or you can't reach out to them after business hours. Because, again, sort of like going back to the airlines, what you find is that companies, employers, they're creative when it comes to finding workarounds. And employees, they're creative as well. And so I think there's just more that can come out of conversations, I think, that can take place between employers and employees. Like, it makes the pie bigger, as opposed to slapping restraints on either an employer or an employee.
If that's the culture where you work, by the way, you might have to have that conversation, or you might need to mosey on down the road somewhere else.
Yes.
Fortunately, we're still in a employment environment where
Absolutely.
There's plenty of opportunity out there.
Unemployment's still at historic lows. Yeah. And those are conversations, I think, that are totally worth having. And like, if you're receiving that text on the weekends or after hours, like, that should be the fire that gets lit under you to say, all right, might be time to go dust off the resume, yeah. brush up, or even...
I think sometimes people sit there and take it when they have options. And
they've
got
options.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. There's way more agency that we have as individuals.
And by the way, some of it is in just job choice. I was talking to somebody the other day, and they were saying, oh, well, the district attorney of Los Angeles, he thinks that he should be able to talk to, reach his employees any hour of the day or night, weekends too. And part of that is the job you take on, right? And yeah, so if you go work for Elon Musk and his rocket company, you should expect probably to work.
Prepared to go hardcore.
That's right. If you tell him you want to,
in his words,
you want to work a little less and you don't want to be reached at certain hours, he'll probably say, go find another job.
Yeah.
And maybe that's the answer.
Yeah. Okay. So a related article that I read recently about developing a leisure ethic. So the author here argued that at other points in history, the goal wasn't to make as much money as possible, where you're working longer hours to pad the bank account. Instead, it was to make and save enough and then choose to work less. And although hours worked, they have ticked down since the pandemic, we are still not great at doing the leisure, or at leisuring. Unpaid free time, we think, can be so much more beneficial than additional paid work time. In our culture, it doesn't seem to value it very highly, but we think it's worth swimming against the current in order to prioritize this. And I think more than anything else, the biggest hurdle is the fact that technology is working against us, right? Basically, industrialization and technology, I think, has led certainly to amazing things, but also to the ability for us to be on all the time. Think back to what, like, the agrarian life. Like, there are natural cycles and seasons literally built into life.
Yeah.
And so what that meant, did we talk about this book recently? I know I read this somewhere. I don't know where. But how life has changed since then, and we are basically on a more industrialized type of schedule versus what our natural bodies would revert to, were we more reliant on sort of the natural cycles.
I mean, even just the invention of the light bulb versus living life.
Literally, yeah. Electric lights, yes. Yeah. And so the reason I point this out is it's going to be more important than ever to have to choose this on your own as opposed to just kind of going along with the flow. Mm-hmm. Like, we are going to have to intentionally make these decisions, because either way, you're making a decision. So it's whether or not you are intentionally proactively making this decision or whether you're doing it passively. And I think the more nuanced and thoughtful conversations we can have around this should lead to people being happier, because folks feel more in control of their life.
I think that
essentially
it just goes also to the point that one of the best things you can do with your money is buy your time and buy your freedom. And if you're so focused on buying the fancy new car, the bigger house, or the next thing on Amazon, which is, again, that's a choice. But it's a choice that many of us make kind of mindlessly these days. And so if you take a more intentional approach, these are the kinds of decisions you can pull back into your life.
Yes.
I think sometimes it feels like it's this societal expectation, or I can't get away from it, I can't escape. But again, that kind of post-achievement life article shows that a lot of people can avoid it, can escape it. The FIRE movement, the growing FIRE movement, it doesn't have to be that extreme, I don't think, for you or for How to Money listeners. But it just goes to show
it's
doable.
It feels like a slight overcorrection, the FIRE movement. But yeah. Culture is encouraging us to continue to work and to continue to consume. Like, consumer spending, like that is what drives the economy. Yeah. And so, like, everything surrounding us is driving us to keep doing what we're doing. And we have to, I like what you said, the ability to buy our time. And it's not that the time is anything magical in and of itself, but it's the fact that time then gives you space to consider what it is that is going to...
Yeah.
Bring you happiness.
But, and that's, I think, a big part of the problem. We have the money mission statement. Maybe we'll link to that in this week's show notes.
Yep.
It's free. It's 2 pages. It asks you a bunch of questions, and you go through it, maybe with your spouse. If you're single, go through it by yourself and start to think about, what do I want my life to look like? And those questions can help poke and prod. And then your money will follow once you have kind of an informed belief about how you want to live your life. You'll start to change things up. And that might look like changing your job. That might look like reducing hours. It's probably going to look like reduced consumption too. So Matt, speaking of...
Enough philosophizing about work.
this is the most philosophical we've gotten on a Friday flight in recent memory.
Let's get way more nuts and boltsy practical.
Okay, so this next story is very practical. There's a new report from Edmunds, and it finds that half of new car purchases are done with a trade-in. And then over 20% of those transactions, when someone buys a new car and trades in their old vehicle, were done with an underwater car.
Mm.
So, and that doesn't mean that the car's like...
Went flooded out.
Not in the office, when he drives into the lake, right? Because he follows the GPS. It's not like that. It means that the owner owed more on the car than it was worth at the time of purchase, right? To the average tune of $6,000, which is bad news. Rolling negative equity into your new car Means worse terms, and it means being underwater in the new car loan for even longer, right? It's turning one bad financial move into a worse one. So what should you do? Well, the answer is to keep your car longer, right? To be zen with the car, even if it's ugly, even if it's beat up. Matt, my parents used to have an ugly old yellow Subaru they called the bruised banana when I was a kid.
Nice.
And it was
the
like...
The dirtier it got, the more bruised it looked.
Yeah, but for me, like, I think for my parents, it was like not a badge of honor. But for me, that's how I would have worn it. I would have been like, yeah, look at this ugly old car. I'm going to keep driving it as long as I can.
Was there no embarrassment as a kid? Because as an adult who's in charge of the finances, you're like, yeah, it is a badge of honor. But as a kid, I remember being embarrassed.
I don't really remember being embarrassed.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, I definitely was.
So that was before Subarus were cool, too, by the way. But yeah, so be zen with the car, I think, until you've paid it off. Like, do not allow yourself to buy the new thing when you still owe money on the old thing, or at least at minimum, until you aren't upside down. If you owe more than it's worth, you got to make more payments, and you got to get past the break-even point before you're willing to trade that in and upgrade.
Yeah.
And I'll say this, car repairs suck. I just incurred a $1,000 car repair bill this week. Not fun, but it sure beats 7 years of massive car payments. Those suck a whole lot worse.
Absolutely, yeah. It's interesting because the Edmunds report, it was highlighting the fact that the behaviors of folks trading in their cars has remained from the pandemic, essentially. And so the reason that a lot of folks were underwater or upside down in their cars was because back during the pandemic, when there were supply chain disruptions, car lots didn't have cars to sell. And so when people were coming in to trade in their vehicle, they're like, oh my gosh, what you want for that? I'll pay you top dollar. And that's no longer the case. Folks are receiving much less for those trade-ins. And I saw that it's called the ATP, the average transaction price of used vehicles has dropped significantly over the past year. And so for vehicles that are 2 to 10 years old, the average transaction price has dropped by 10%. And for a used vehicle that's only 1 year old, it's dropped close to 20%. Dang. It was 17%, which is a ton of money when you're talking about the average 1 year old used vehicle is like $38,000, $40,000. That's a ton of money to have it go down that much. And so what I'm highlighting here as well is that there's a silver lining, which is folks who are looking to potentially buy a used vehicle. Hey, the longer you can hold out, the more likely you are to pay less for that used vehicle.
Yeah, that's true. And I will say too, I was also shocked that 50% of purchases involved a trade-in at all, that people don't privately sell their cars anymore. We've talked about that. Like, it's harder to find a good used car sold by an actual human. There are all these intermediary third parties who want to cut. And so
make it so easy. Carvana does.
They do. But that also means you're paying more typically. And so it might behoove you to wait a little longer, hunt for the private individual to sell you a car. And so even if you aren't underwater on that vehicle too, that you're selling, at least consider selling your vehicle privately, because it's going to mean more money. The one caveat I will say is you get a tax benefit sometimes by trading in your car in some states, like in Georgia. That doesn't apply in states like California. So look at the fine print too, because maybe the trade-in reduces the sale price, which reduces then the amount that's taxable, which makes trade-in a little less egregious in Georgia. But still, I would say getting top dollar for your vehicle is the priority. Even if it takes a little bit extra time, it might be worth it considering the extra multi-thousand dollars you might be able to get.
I dig it. Yeah. So cars, that's a very expensive purchase in your life. We're going to talk about perhaps the most expensive purchase that you can make, how that's getting all shook up. We'll get to that and more right after the break. When it comes to financial advice, you got to trust the source. It's why you listen to this podcast. And if you're looking to upgrade your wallet, you need to turn to NerdWallet. Their expert team of nerds dives into the details to help you find smarter financial products. If you're paying for vacations with whatever card is in your wallet, you could be missing out on miles you didn't even know you were leaving on the table.
You can get a new card with more miles and more upgrades. What could future you do with more travel rewards? A hotel upgrade, lounge access? Wherever you go next, make it happen with a smarter travel credit card. Don't wait to make smart financial decisions.
Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. As with all cards, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply. NerdWallet, finance smarter.
Cachava is the all-in-one superfood shake made up of high-quality plant-based nutrients. It's got greens, superfruits, plant proteins, antioxidants, adaptogens, probiotics, and in other words, everything your body craves to feel your best. This is where Cachava really earns their 52,000 plus five-star reviews. It tastes amazing. It's creamy and smooth with just water, and it comes in 5 delicious flavors. You can choose from chocolate, vanilla, chai, matcha, and coconut acai. Cachava is offering How to Money listeners 10% off for a limited time. I've been using Cachava in breakfast smoothies in the morning recently. It's just so nice to pack in a bunch of nutrients early in the AM in a way that's satisfying and energizing. So if you want to optimize your breakfast, your workout shake, be sure to check out Cachava. Just go to cachava.com/howtomoney. That's spelled K-A-C-H-A-V-A, and get 10% off your first order. That's KACHAVA.com/howtomoney. I'm guessing that a lot of listeners are starting to solidify their summer travel plans. We always like to get the families together, Matt, for a week at the beach. Every single summer. We've already got that trip to St. Simon's on the calendar. Pumped for that. But sometimes those vacations get expensive. So what better way to offset some of those costs than to have your home earning some money while you're away?
That's right. Why let it sit empty when it could be earning extra income? It's the financially smart thing to do. So think it through. Maybe you've got some extra space in your home, or maybe you have an entire house to host, or maybe you're just going on vacation and your home is sitting empty. In every case, you can Airbnb it. You already have the space, so it won't be a huge adjustment.
I mean, the way I see it, if you're not using your space, you have two options. You can let it just sit there empty, or you do some optimizing and make some money off it. Really, if you think about it, you already have an Airbnb. You just need to start using it. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. All right, we're back. The Friday flight continues. And of course, we got to get to the ludicrous headline of the week. This one comes from a real estate blog, Matt, that is one of the better real estate blogs out there. It's called The Basis Point.
For the nerds.
For the nerds, yeah. For the people who like the industry insider kind of stuff. Well, this headline reads, "Are home buyers hit hardest by landmark realtor lawsuit?" The end of the headline. That's the end of the headline.
TLDR, no. So why don't you elaborate, Joel?
Well, okay, so everybody knows homes aren't cheap. They're really expensive right now, and interest rates still kind of up there, at least when we're talking about where they were recently. And exacerbating the problem is that buying and selling homes is expensive. So the transaction costs, we've always talked about the transaction costs of real estate. You have to factor those in to how you think about buying and selling. For instance, you don't want to buy a home, sell it 2 years later. The transaction costs will eat up any sort of value you might have been able to gain. And the National Association of Realtors has acted as a monopoly of sorts for decades. They've protected high fees for agents, and that's been costing individuals across the country big bucks with every transaction that happens. But then this article in The Basis Point was trying to outline how this is actually bad for buyers, this new ruling that the National Association of Realtors can't have this monopoly status and that people are going to be able to negotiate their fees directly with agents. And I just don't think that's true. I don't think this is bad for buyers. Buyers might need, as the article points out, to fork over money to hire an agent to represent them. But buyers were paying big bucks through the roof because of the baked-in fee anyway, right? Yep. It's not like the buyer's agent was working for free. the problem...
Oh, they were still getting paid.
They were getting paid. The problem was the opaqueness of the whole system, and the overall effect of greatly reduced fees is going to have a positive impact on everyone in the housing market, except for maybe real estate agents.
That's true, yeah. So the main thing here is that sellers won't be forced to pay a dime to the buyer's agent. That flat 6% fee that's been in existence basically for forever, where the two agents essentially split it 3-3, that's going to be a thing of the past. And so buyers, yeah, they're going to have to find a way to compensate their agent directly, which is what The Basis Point is pointing out. But all sorts of great models, I think, are bound to spring up now that this model is collapsing. It's not being propped up by this... monopoly, essentially, like you said. Yeah. I mean, I think you said it right, by the National Association of Realtors. I think competition is going to bring down the fees across the board. And I think there's a chance, I think initially it might cause, there's going to be some unrest as folks are trying to figure out what's going on.
In particular, this spring housing market. Through this summer, people are like, do I buy more quickly? Do I talk to my agent about the fees? Do I start to negotiate? What do I do?
But I do think that maybe in the short term that it slows things down just a little bit because of the uncertainty, because folks are like, well, how's this all going to shake out? It's interesting that if you think about it, the way realtors get paid is from whoever is selling the house. The person who's selling the house is the one getting the fat check. at the end of the closing, right?
That's why they do it that way.
And so because of that, they are less price sensitive. They're that's like, right. Okay, what's 6%? Well, okay, oh, it's a bummer, but hey, that's just how the cookie crumbles. Mm-hmm. As opposed to the buyer being the one who's now paying essentially for half of that, or perhaps less if fees come down overall, is going to make them more price sensitive. And like, there's going to be more competition because of that, because they're the ones on the front end of the transaction having to make that happen. They haven't realized years of appreciation with all this equity that's now in their home. I think that's an interest, like there's a psychological component here. Like, it's not even psychological. It's literally the person selling the house has more money.
Yeah.
Because they most likely are selling it for more than they paid for it. But it'll be interesting from a dollars and cents standpoint, the fact that buyers have less, but also from a psychological standpoint, the fact that, oh man, I'm having to pay how much in order to hopefully buy this home and hopefully to see my equity grow in it. I think there's something going on there as well.
What's fascinating is, one, I think there's going to be a lot of like digital startups coming, and yes, I think Redfin and Zillow are going to help change this.
They've
game
already
too.
Been doing it, but I think it's only going to normalize it.
And that's right.
Yeah, I think there will be a whole host of different players that are going to cater to folks who don't want to go use a realtor at all.
And there's going to be levels, right? There's going to be levels of this. So if you want the top dollar, high end, white glove service, some agents might find themselves getting paid even more. I don't know. And then there's going to be a medium tier, there's going to be a lower tier where you're like, I'm just hunting on Zillow, I'm reaching out proactively, I'm scheduling my own tour of the home, and you basically, your transaction costs go down significantly. Yeah. I think that's what's going to be great, is that you're going to be able to kind of choose your own adventure when it comes to, and it's going to, but it's going to take time for this to shake out. I will say the one thing you can do now or in the near future, if you're planning on buying or selling, I would talk to your agent proactively up front about the fee that they're able to get from the home. And I would say, listen, hey, I'm doing this legwork, I'm more involved in the process, would you feel comfortable taking this much? I think now the negotiation table is kind of wide open for how you can approach your real estate agent, whereas it wasn't even just a few months ago. So we love real estate agents. They provide a great service. But real estate commissions in most other countries are about half of what they've been in the U.S. And I just think under this new, more competitive environment, we're going to see the best, most productive agents thrive. A lot of agents, I think 50% of agents, Matt, sell one or zero houses in a year. A lot of those folks will just exit the doors completely, which is understandable.
It's like podcasts on Apple that have at least one episode.
That's right. It's
three or less.
The
or
massive
like that.
Preponderance of them, right?
Yeah.
So, I think this is ultimately a good thing for consumers. When we know what we're paying and when the fees aren't hidden, and when there's not a monopoly enforcing a certain way of doing business, it's going to provide a lot of choice so that we can all make more informed decisions.
I like it, man. Yeah. Plus, I'm thinking about it too. I don't see how buyers aren't going to be able to roll those buyer agent costs into their loan. Like, if you think about just how loans are structured now anyway, like there are already so many fees, an origination fee, an appraisal fee, underwriting fee, tax record, you know, there's like all these fees that get rolled into it. And I would be surprised if lenders aren't approving agents' fees to also get rolled into that the overall loan amount. So maybe folks won't be as price sensitive. But what that's going to do then is it's going to raise their monthly payment. And so I guess that'll be an even more important number to look at.
I'm so curious to see how this shakes out, because
Where is the equilibrium going to end up?
Yeah.
Like, where is it going to land?
And ultimately, I think it's going to create more supply on the market over time as well, because I think people are just, when transaction costs go down, people are going to be more willing to sell their home. And guess what we need right now?
Yeah.
We need more people being willing to sell their homes.
Yeah. Not without a bunch of hiccups, though. I know what we're going to hear in the coming months is a realtor complaining about it, but then also buyers and sellers just like, it's just a gray area. Well, like, we are in transition right now.
That's what's already happening. I think that's exactly what this article is about. Home buyers hit hardest, like, because they're gonna have to pay their agent directly. That it's making it seem like they're at a disadvantage because of this ruling, and they're not. The overall fees will go down. They'll overall pay less. Well, they might have to pay upfront directly, though.
Yeah. Buyers today, they're not going to be encouraged by the fact that eventually it'll be better for the folks who are looking to buy right now. But let's talk about the dire need for skilled laborers. Let's talk about blue-collar work. It continues to be an area of need in our country. Like, what it is that the push for everyone and their mom to go to college that has reduced the number of folks willing to do work with their hands. We talked about this in depth way back in the day.
Is that a Napoleon Dynamite reference, by the way? Your mom goes to college?
I want that. We talked about this, though, with Ken Rusk, episode 277. This is way back in the day, where he talked about the value of the skilled trades But there's new data from Handshake, and they find that Gen Z, they don't want to do the plumbing work. They don't want to be an HVAC or an auto technician or an electrician. Manual labor, we know it's not for everyone. But at the same time, college isn't either, and the pay is growing rapidly in some of these in-demand blue-collar sectors. And then on top of that, though, even if you're not super handy, there's room for entrepreneurship within the space, meaning that many folks can just run their own very profitable small business. I literally have a friend at the gym. He's in mergers and acquisitions. He works for a bank, but he doesn't want to do that anymore. And he's literally right now on the hunt to acquire an HVAC company. He's like, I'm going to have to learn the ins and outs just so I know what I'm talking about. But he's like, the plan is for me to run that business. I'm not the one making the house calls. And that's what he wants to do instead of like having the corporate gig. And I think there's a massive opportunity there, as lots of folks who, let's face it, are older, they're boomers, and they're exiting the skilled labor trades, and there's a lot of opportunity there for younger folks.
Something we talked about with Cody Sanchez back in the day, right? That basically this is a ripe time to buy somebody else's small business, and there's a lot of potential value to be had, because depending on what the business is, you might be able to get it for a song, and then you can optimize that business, you can grow your wealth,
implement new systems,
exactly,
yeah, run it a lot more efficiently. Yeah, there's a lot of upside here.
The other upside, by the way, when you look at the numbers of what, Matt, some of these skilled trades, what they can earn, even if you're working for someone else, like you can,
So you don't want to own your own business. You just want to do the work.
Yeah. You might be like 21, 22 years old, making $85,000 a year. And guess what? You also avoid the student loan debt.
Yeah.
So it's like a double win. Mm-hmm. You're starting to make significant money, and it didn't take an expensive college degree and four or more years to get there. And the more our society promotes college as a no-brainer, the greater the dearth of skilled labor that we have in this country.
Yep.
When it becomes kind of the no-brainer, one-size-fits-all solution, even for people where it's a square peg in a round hole, we're just actually not funneling people to their most productive ends. And then, you know, fewer folks entering those professions means more opportunity, like there is now, and earning potential for people who skip the college route, go to a trade school, or take the apprenticeship route. One interesting note, by the way, on the college front, is that many colleges are axing student loans completely. Matt, saw this recently. It doesn't mean that it's free to go to that school, because there still might be an expected family contribution or even stuff like work study requirements for the student. But I feel like this is a trend we can get behind. Why are more colleges not doing it? I think there's a couple dozen colleges who have entered into this kind of no student loan agreement. We'll link to a list of the colleges that have these no loan policies. But I feel like there's a world of creative solutions to help make college more affordable, less expensive, and less debt-driven. And this is at least kind of one of those cool solutions that's starting to, you know, gain steam.
Yeah, especially if so a lot of the funding is being provided by like endowments of some of these colleges. And what better use of an endowment? Like, I mean, when you've got like $50 billion, Harvard, that's who I'm speaking to right now. Like, what better way to use that money than to fund the tuition of folks who don't have the money to be able to afford that education?
Yeah.
I think that's great.
Well, and there was a billionaire who gave a lot of money to a medical school in New York recently. And basically everybody who goes to study medicine there is going to get their degree debt-free too, which I love that. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a great thing for rich people to do.
It's like at you see the different commencement speeches, and there's like somebody who's really successful and graduated class of whatever, you know, 30, 40 years ago. And then like at the end of the thing, he's like, by the way, all your student loans are forgiven. they're on me. Check's on me. It just makes you feel good inside.
When Matt gives a commencement speech, he just gives out free burritos. So.
What, like work for Moe's or Chipotle or something?
I mean, that's all you got the money for.
Bean and rice burrito, is it still 99 cents at Taco Bell?
I don't know.
Let's talk about social media and how it's for savers, because it giveth and it taketh away. It can save you money or it can cost you money depending on how you use it. The Times, they had an article this week about the only reason that Gen Z still uses Facebook. And no surprise here, it's for Facebook Marketplace, right? Of course, to be able to buy and sell used goods.
It's kind of like when your mom and grandma got on there, you're like, I'm getting off Facebook. And then Marketplace got so good, you had to get back on.
It's so good. And so Instagram, which of course is also owned by Meta, is only trying to sell you new things with all of those targeted ads. Facebook, it's become the most robust used marketplace on the internet, I think. And so farewell, Craigslist. We won't miss you because of, man, all the different scams.
Oh, I've got some good Craigslist memories, though.
Do you really?
Yeah.
I don't at all. Marketplace is the best place. And plus, you got the local buy nothing groups on Facebook. Those are pretty good, too. So
yeah.
The ability to completely avoid spending any money.
I think there are
the way to go.
Two reasons to be on Facebook. One, is Facebook Marketplace. The other is Facebook Groups. And the great thing is you can use both of those without subjecting yourself to all the rest of the things that Facebook tries to suck you into. So there is a plugin called the Facebook News Feed Eradicator. I put that on my browser. So when I go to Facebook, there's literally two places I hop over to. One is to the How to Money Facebook group because it's awesome. So many great questions and people helping each other out. And I just want to like be a part of the cool discussions. And then the other thing is Facebook Marketplace. If I'm looking to buy or sell something, that's all I use Facebook for anymore. I don't know what people believe politically anymore, or all the, I'm not seeing all those ads coming through. I'm really just using Facebook for the things that matter and ditching all the rest.
You're not getting reminders of ex-girlfriends from high school, Joel?
Nope. Don't know if they even exist anymore. I hope they're doing fine though, I guess. All right, that's going to do it for this episode. We'll have links to all the articles we mentioned up on our show notes at howtomoney.com.
That's right. We hope everyone has a beautiful weekend, a beautiful spring weekend. We'll see you back here on Monday with a fresh Ask How to Money episode.
Should I fake sneeze right now? Achoo.
Listener questions. The pollen, it does get to you.
That's true.
It gets to me as well. But buddy, that's going to be it for this one. Until next time.
Best friends out.
Best friends out. Supercharge your work decks with AI-powered Canva presentations. All you do is start with a prompt. You describe your presentation in a few words, and Canva presentations will generate captivating slides that you can then customize in seconds.
Canva presentations are designed for every workplace and every department. Whether you work in sales, marketing, HR, ops, and more, Canva presentations can generate any deck you want for work. Sales decks, marketing presentations, onboarding plans, you name it. Any department can save time on any presentation with AI.
Generate slides in seconds with Canva presentations at canva.com, designed for work.
Upswell Marketing would like to remind you that when customers choose your small business, they're really choosing you. So focus on super serving your existing customers and let Upswell handle the pipeline generation of new leads and customers.
Upswell specializes in developing customized direct response campaigns and is now offering a no obligation free assessment of your current marketing strategies.
Not to mention, new customers also receive 15% off their first order when they mention that they heard about Upswell on this podcast. For more information, visit upswellmarketing.com. That's upswellmarketing.com.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.